0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. You've seen the headlines in the Irish papers today. Mad Vlad's office rocket, Putin TV host, and Satan missile strike warning. Russia threat to nuke Ireland. Well, they actually refer to us as the British Isles. So maybe the Russian ambassador in Dublin or to Ireland should acquaint them with the proper title of the country. But Seamus O'Brien. Seamus, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What have you discovered about next Sunday noon at the Papal Cross in the Phoenix Park in Dublin?
Yeah, I came across a post on Facebook advertising a car rally to commemorate Victory Day, organised by a Russian group called the Compatriots of Russia in Ireland or something like that.
Okay.
And the Russian ambassador is to address the rally when it arrives at its destination in Dublin, which is going to be the Papal Cross in Phoenix Park, which is, first of all, I found that quite a bizarre location in terms of this kind of, you know, not glorification of war, but remembrance of the war, Russian war dead, to have it at the Papal Cross, which would be, for me anyway, I'm not remotely religious or anything, but I can see the peaceful significance of it. But I just a little bit of the background. I'm teaching art to a group of Ukrainian people down in the Gallery of Modern Art in Waterford, and it was one of the women in the group who brought my attention to the Facebook post.
Okay, and she's from Ukraine, she's a refugee, and she translated the Facebook post. It was in Russian.
It was in Russian, but you know what, on Facebook you can just press translate.
Yeah, yeah.
But she was well able to explain to me in English. Her English was good enough to explain exactly what was going on, and then she pointed me in the direction of this Ukrainian group who were you know, discussing various issues like the normal issues of, you know, English classes, where would you get them, and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and this issue then was a hot topic on the page as well. But the I just put up a reply to on the Russian group's page. You know, that I found it distasteful that they would be having a remembrance of war victims while Russia is in the process of invading Ukraine. And underneath it, I was bombarded with comments by Russians living in Ireland about their right to freedom of speech. Yet, ironically, this morning, all of my comments on the post were deleted. So there was just
Now, did any of them argue that the Victory Day comes from 1945, comes from the victory of the Allies over the Nazis.
Yes, absolutely. They didn't, not the Allies, but they did mention that it was the Russians' victory over the Allies. They didn't seem to take into account the role of the rest of the Allies. But that said, Joe, I accept that, and apparently, apart from the past couple of years of COVID restrictions, this event has gone on for the last 10 years, but it's the timing of it now.
And has it been cancelled in any other countries?
For sure, it's been cancelled in Kazakhstan, and I believe it's been cancelled or restricted in certain ways in Lithuania and a couple of the Baltic states. Now, I can't say with any great certainty on that. I know
it's organised. You say in Ireland it's organised by the Council of the Russian Compatriots in Ireland. Now,
the Council of the Russian Compatriots.
In the last few minutes, there's reports that in New Delhi, as we speak, Pope Francis is on a visit to India. Pope Francis has said that the Hungarian Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, Hungarian Prime Minister, recently re-elected with a massive majority, and they took over yesterday, the new government. Well, he was in power, but he formed a new government yesterday. But the Pope Francis said that the Hungarian Prime Minister told him that Russia intends to end its invasion of Ukraine on the 9th of May, Victory Day. The pontiff told an Italian newspaper, Corriere della Sera, that the Hungarian premier told him this at their meeting in late April. Now,
That may well be true. If that is the truth, then there's probably a reason for Ukrainians to celebrate if they leave their country, rather than for the Russians to be celebrating what's gone on. But I don't know, Joe. I'd find that to be quite skeptical. I'd be skeptical about it, particularly coming from Viktor Orban. I really put too much stock in what he'd be saying.
Why would the Russian compatriots of Ireland or whatever they call, why would they have an event at the Papal Cross?
That, for me, is the most bizarre venue to have any kind of an event. But the rally itself begins in Enfield, in County Meath. It's a car rally. It begins at the Apple Green in Enfield. And they're asking people...
And have Apple Green given permission?
I have no idea.
Have the OPW given permission for the Phoenix Mark?
I don't know. I did contact, just by email, I contacted the Gardaí in Enfield to see if they were aware of it even. But I would say they probably are, because I have my suspicions that that group with a name like the Council of Compatriots, or whatever it's called, it sounds very embassy-driven, maybe. And I don't want to get into that. I don't know that, but it just sounds very official. Like, the Ukrainian group's called Ukrainians in Ireland. It sounds very...
What is their reaction when they read this, that there's because there's now 22,000 Ukrainian refugees who are fleeing the war, fleeing the invasion, fleeing the genocide in Ireland. What is their reaction to this show of
the Ukrainians I've spoken to are there's a mixture of fear, horror, and disgust, and of course all coming with anger. They're all here also under this status of temporary protection. Yeah. And I think the word protection is very important in this context, because they shouldn't be subjected to this kind of... It will be intimidatory. There's no question about that. To have that here, they feel intimidated by this event taking place, because traditionally, they've been telling me this, traditionally this event is to glorify the Russian military, and it has been used as a vehicle for propaganda.
And there's normally a massive military parade in Moscow.
I did see that there was a 35% cutback in what the military kind of hardware that will be on display this year, but it still will be extensive in terms of what we would ever see in any kind of commemoration. It would be just, you know, an incredible show of force.
Would Mr. Filiatov risk going to the Papal? Now, people might say, well, there's a Russian Orthodox Church and they're quite religious in Russia, but the Russian Orthodox Church is effectively an arm of the government. The head of the Russian Orthodox Church is an ex-KGB agent and buddy of Putin.
Look, Joe, to be quite
Russian Orthodox Church have come out in support of the invasion. So no credibility there.
To be quite honest, in the photograph, that's the kind of the cover photograph of that group, there is somebody dressed in religious regalia, which to me looks like an Orthodox minister or priest, whatever it's called. And so I wouldn't be... That's what I have suspicions about who's behind it, but, you know, I can't back those up at all. Okay. I heard
the TD, Neil Richmond, who's a senior Fine Gael TD and spokesperson and he was a Brexit spokesperson for a while there, but now he's a spokesperson in Europe, where he's worked in the Parliament for a long time, but he's now a TD. He was quite unequivocal this morning on national radio, saying that Mr. Filiatov and everyone in Orwell Road and the house here behind us in Aylesbury Road should be expelled immediately, especially after this threat yesterday that they would nuke Ireland and a tsunami would overtake us and kill us. Now, God forbid, we hope that's the lunacy. But this guy has also spoken in the last few weeks, I see, about how long it would take a nuclear weapon to get from Russia to Paris and from Russia to Rome and from Russia to Berlin. So there's a lot of this chatter going on, and apparently he is Putin's mouthpiece, so to speak. He is a broadcaster Moriarty, yeah, a personality insofar as any broadcasters are personalities, but he is a personality, and but that's what he's been saying, and doing all this hypothesis and getting his information from whoever to say along, to predict how long it would take to annihilate us. But if Mr. Filiatov went to the Phoenix Park next, or if Mr. Filiatov goes to the Phoenix Park next Sunday at noon, people are hardly, the flower sellers from outside the zoo are hardly going to be running across throwing bouquets at him.
Yeah, I don't know. But even you know, like, it's unlikely, I would think, in the grand scale of things, if a nuclear missile would be directed at Ireland or Britain or France. But even the fact that they're talking about this is just, it's frightening, and it's, again, it's intimidatory. And I also noticed, Joe, I think I put it in the email originally, about the symbolism on the advertisement for the event. Is there's on there's a star, a Russian star, which is entitled to put on it, of course. But around the star, there's wrapped this, and not, no offence to any Kilkenny people listening, I'm originally from Wexford, no offence to any Kilkenny, it's black and amber. And that ribbon is actually, it would be on the same level as the poppy in terms of it's, you know, used for remembrance in Russia. But in, I think, 2014 or 2017, that was, that the sale of it was banned in several countries, including Ukraine, because of its appropriation to represent a military might.
But what about this? You know, this gathering, you say it's going to happen in Applegreen on Sunday and then proceed to the Papal Cross. Is this the same group that they had the Z, that infamous letter which the Russian forces...
I don't know. Now, I did see, just I checked it there before I came out, I saw that they have called on the list of do's and don'ts. They've called on people not to use that symbol, which to me is almost an admission that there was people going there that were intending to use that symbol.
Now, more importantly, and I'll stay with us, more importantly, James, how are the Ukrainian refugees that you were dealing with in your art class, how are they getting on?
Well, I suppose they're almost like in a state of limbo. They don't know what's going to happen. A lot of them don't speak English.
Yeah,
some of them do, of course, and they're a great help to the others, but they're totally bewildered. That's the only phrase I could use. They're happy to be safe and here, and they're grateful and thankful to the Irish people. The group that I'm with now, they're staying in Tracy's Hotel in Waterford, and they love it there. Great time for the staff there. Nothing but good things to say about Tracy's.
Okay, great.
But Tracy's Hotel is not their home. And,
of course.
Most of them,
it's not where their family. Well, their brothers, fathers, husbands, grandfathers, nephews are all still in Ukraine.
Many of their grandfathers would have died fighting the Nazis.
That's right.
You know, but they're not going to be out, you know, celebrating.
Of course.
Anything like
Seamus,
that.
Seamus, what do you think of this call by Neil Richmond, the Fine Gael TD, this morning, that in light of the latest insult, the threat to nuke Ireland, that we should definitely expel the Russian ambassador and all his staff?
I'm surprised he hasn't been expelled already. I think he absolutely should be, and all the staff should go with him.
And the answer to that from the government is that we want a European-wide response. So,
I think that definitely is something that should be done.
Yeah, but Neil Richmond was saying this morning. We should take a stand ourselves.
Absolutely, in terms of peace and neutrality, Ireland has never been afraid to stand alone, and I think they should do it in this.
Okay.
The leaders in this, because I think the rest of Europe would admire that stance and follow suit. It may be one of those cases where it's a politically sensitive thing.
Neil Richmond was saying basically shut the embassy. He wasn't saying do an exchange, send home the 33 of them and send back another 33 martyrs. No, he's saying shut the embassy, lock, stock and red beer barrels. Stay there, Seamus. 515-0818-715-815. Tommy, you were taken by the fact that Putin has cut off gas supplies to Poland and Bulgaria. Your point, please.
Well, I'd like to see them cutting off his gas and his electricity to his Orwell Road property, Joe, and leave him in the dark and see how he feels. Is there any energy company in this land that has the balls to do it?
Yeah. Well, wasn't there some problem in the embassy, which is in Orwell Road, the residences in Aylesbury Road? But was there not some problem with the embassy in Orwell Road that he couldn't get oil or something?
I don't know. Maybe it was with that chap that drove his truck through the gate.
Yeah, no, don't talk about that before the court. But Tommy, the oil company, I think, the oil company refused, but then Filatov got another supplier.
Well, whoever refused to deliver him oil, Joe, should be applauded for it.
Okay, and what do you think of this?
The ones that did supply him with oil should be named and shamed.
And what about this?
You don't need the likes of him in this country.
And what about this plan? Seamus has got the information from Ukrainians that he's staying with, or that are working with him, and he's working with them in Waterford. They've came across this notice about a pro-Russian victory demonstration at the Papal Cross in the Phoenix Park next Sunday at noon.
That's ridiculous. To have a protest on the Papal Cross that symbolises peace, I don't believe it. But there is some fanatics over here. They were driving up the M50 with big Zeds on their cars. It shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah, but the OPW can. I don't know if you need permission from the OPW. I presume you do to have a gathering in the Phoenix Park. Okay. Again, why you would pick the Papal Cross? And remember when the Pope came in 1979, he then went on to Drogheda that evening, where he said, "On my hands and knees," he was talking about the IRA. "On my hands and knees, I beg you to turn away from violence." Not that it did any good, but that was his famous. Famous plea, I presume it applies here as well. Okay, Tommy, Seamus, good to meet you, Margaret. 0818 715 815, joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And joe@rte.ie. You all know Dr. Ilona Duffy, GP from Monaghan, for her sage and wise words during the COVID pandemic in the last 2.5 years. But you contacted us about Norbert. Who is Norbert, Ilona?
Well, Joe, Norbert is our cat, our family cat, who we've had for over 2 years. And unfortunately, Norbert, we noticed, was kind of unwell a few weeks ago. And we brought her to the vet. And initially thought maybe she'd had been in a fight or kind of an accident of some sort, maybe injured her tail. But things kind of worsened over the week, back to the vet. And eventually we had an x-ray done that showed she had 3 pieces of metal in her body, 2 in the body and 1 in the tail. So they made the decision then that she needed to undergo general anaesthetic and that they'd try and remove them. And unfortunately, they can only remove one. And when they took it out, they realised that it was a metal pellet, like so something, I believe, from an air gun.
Mm-hmm. And is this a phenomenon up in Monaghan?
Well, no, like we live in the outskirts of Monaghan town in a quiet area. An area, I mean, it was shocking because really to see that this cat had obviously been shot a couple of times, 3 times probably, if there are 3 pieces of metal, meant that somebody had actually cornered her and then shot at her deliberately. So, I mean, I don't know why anyone would have these guns, but I think I've heard sometimes farmers having to scare away crows and birds and things, but they wouldn't be shooting usually deliberately at anything. But this is different. This is very different. This is somebody who deliberately shot at a helpless animal. And Joe, I mean, it's so traumatic. It's so traumatic for us looking at our cat, and even our vets are so emotionally engaged because this cat has now developed these spasms in the tail.
Oh, wow.
So the tail starts whacking around the place and she's trying to hold it down, and it's spread now up her back. So we're at the stage where she's actually on Valium. She's been on other neuropathic pain medication and is now at the stage this weekend because she was so distressed. She's chewing her tail, obviously because of the pain, and biting right through to the bone. So she's now on morphine.
Oh, for God's sake. And what does the vet say, Ilona?
The vet, well, I think they're equally as horrified, and they're just, look at watching a poor, defenceless, helpless animal that's in pain. And again, like us, wondering why would anyone do this? And again, it was part of the reason for highlighting it, and I tweeted initially, was really to kind of make people aware. And probably people may know that a family member has one of these guns, and maybe somebody young who doesn't understand that these can kill, these can maim, these can hurt, and perhaps thinks this is just an air gun, it's nothing big, it might cause a bit of pain, but it's not that bad. But again, our cat is lucky, our cat has us. But there were no visible outside wounds until it started biting its tail because of the pain. But, I mean, imagine the poor stray animal or another animal that just didn't have to do with it.
Is Norbert going to survive?
Well, we hope so. The next plan is to continue the morphine, and we're arranging a specialist, the vet is arranging a specialist referral, and probably to go and see about getting scans done and see, a bit like adults, things like MRIs and CTs can be done in animals, but obviously they can only be done in specialist vet units. And that's what we're looking at now. That's the next step, and to see where to go. Because if she's to continue as she is in such pain and nothing could be done for her, I mean, you couldn't keep her in pain like that.
Norbert, why is your cat called Norbert?
So I have a household of lads who are all mad Liverpool fans, and that's why she's called Norbert.
Okay. So. Mr. Klopp's middle name, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
So I believe.
And by the way, who prescribes morphine to a cat? Can you do that?
No, I can't do that. It's the vets. Joe, it's amazing. I mean, it was even for me as a doctor, you're kind of seeing all of these things that are being prescribed. So she was on another one called Neurontin, and that's gabapentin. That would be used. The many of your listeners who are on it for their back pain and neck pain and other pains. And again, it's used for cats. So the difficulty is just it's smaller amounts, and obviously it's based on weight, and the vets would decide on all of that. And certain medications can't be given to cats, but many of the anti-inflammatories we might use, like meloxicam, which is for adults, can be used in cats as well. So, again, it's just also, I can't say enough for our vets. Like, over the weekend, I had to call them and seek advice, and they provided us with the morphine for her. And to many other vets who became aware throughout the country of the plight of Norbert and offered advice and offered help as well.
Okay. Well, do you believe in nine lives and all that carry on, or...?
Oh, I don't know. I think many cats have them, but I think this is worse. This isn't. This is kind of a cat that's now been named and will never be the same, and a cat that's.
But you're right, Ilona, about the cat, because cats are so fast, they can whoop walls and everything. So he must have been cornered.
He must have been cornered. And again, it goes back to this thing, you know, we all have a responsibility. Those of us who know somebody who has these kind of guns should be talking to them and saying, you know, what do you use that for? You'd never use it on an animal. And again, I'm not, you know, I don't know. It's hard to imagine what kind of a person would do this. But also the concern is that we know from studies and things that people who start off harming animals will progress with that kind of behaviour. So now's the time to nip it in the bud if you do know someone who may be acting the maggot with animals and being cruel to them.
Okay. Well, hopefully, it sounds like Norbert will survive, but hopefully the pain definitely recedes. Okay, Ilona, how is your general practice in terms of COVID? Because that's what we're used to hearing you about. What's the incidence like at the minute? What is the severity of the symptoms?
COVID definitely less prevalent, or we're hearing less about it. I think one of the concerns at the moment is the long COVID, and we're seeing an awful lot of patients who, with the new variants, are complaining of ongoing fatigue, cough and palpitations, and really suffering a lot with it. So I think while things have improved, if you're due a vaccine, get it. And for those people who are tied to a booster, go ahead and get it.
Absolutely. How many symptoms are there at this stage of COVID?
Every symptom that's a virus symptom. So that can be from the gastroenteritis to simply aches and pains to obviously the cough and the snuffles and the sinus congestion and the sore throat. So I think if you think it's a virus, I would still be suggesting people test yourselves, because you want to prevent others getting it, especially those who are vulnerable. And we are still hearing of mortalities, of deaths as a result of COVID.
Okay, Dr. Ilona Duffy and Norbert, thanks indeed. Joe at rt.ie. 51551. And remember our WhatsApp number if you want to send us a voice message. It's very simple. 087 184 3709. 184 3709. And remember, if you send us a voice message, you were allowing us, if decided to broadcast that, actually, that voice message or part thereof. Tommy McCabe. Tommy, this was mentioned medication there to Ilona, morphine and what have you. What, you got involved in a drugs trial. What was it, Tommy?
It was a trial to help lower cholesterol, which was very, very successful. After taking the first injection, it's a pen you take every 2 weeks, my cholesterol levels were back to normal.
And how did you get involved in this drugs trial?
Well, I was referred by my specialist because I'm statin intolerant, which means I can't take statins because okay. I get bad side effects, like cramps and pains in the chest, the arms, and it can be quite alarming.
And did they talk to you about side effects or?
I suppose the trial was to identify if there were any. There were none.
And were you happy with that? Yeah.
I was happy with the trial until it ended.
But if there's no side effects, why was it a trial? Do you follow me?
Exactly.
It is a trial now, so that means there is a risk.
Yeah. Well, okay. I had no side effects from it. I was on it for a number of years, and so I was quite happy to continue.
Okay, so down came your cholesterol, which is brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Yeah. And what happened next?
I ran out of it and I inquired to get my new prescription and I was told that the trial had ended and that I'd have to get some bloods tested, and they requested that my last set of bloods be sent to them. Firstly, the ones with high cholesterol, as to the current ones, which would show the lower cholesterol. And they told me that I didn't qualify for the trial, that I would have to pay for it, 600 okay. euros for the month's supply, which is two injections.
600 euro per month?
Yeah.
And if you don't continue the treatment, what happens?
My cholesterol just goes bananas. And I can't take the statins. They've suggested that I go back on.
Tommy, in the small print even, did they say that to you? If you were agreeable to go on a trial, and it is a trial, so it's for approval, and to see what side effects, if any, but it still is a risk. Where did you read, if you go on the trial and the trial is successful, however, we will withdraw the drug from you unless you can pay us 600 quid a month?
No, I didn't see anything of that nature. And it's quite a long time ago, about 3 or 4 years ago.
So, where are you now as regards to 600 quid a month? Have you paid? How long have you been off this wonder drug?
4 weeks.
It's called Sanofi Pradalurant.
Yeah, 75 milligram, okay.
So, how are you feeling? You don't really feel unwell because of cholesterol. It's what happens at the... And you get the bang.
Yeah, look, I suppose that's it. Like, it's just a build-up and a build-up and a build-up until something happens. I was told that I would have to have cholesterol levels of above 8 or had a heart attack recently to qualify to go on it.
So what are you on now for your cholesterol?
I've been prescribed statins again, which I'm sort of reluctant to take.
And what effect do statins have on you?
They give me cramps, very bad cramps in the muscles and in the chest, and that's why I was taken off them.
So you're in limbo. Are you back to square one, or you're back before square one at this stage? Do you follow me?
I'm back to square one, basically, back at the start, trying to figure out what to do. And I suppose I wasn't the only one on this trial, Joe. There are others who were told that they don't qualify either for the same reasons. And I just think it's totally unfair for the likes of me and the other individuals who took part in this trial quite happily, got no financial gain, nothing from it, but lowered the cholesterol, which was fantastic. And then to be told that you don't qualify just doesn't make sense.
But what about the drugs payment scheme?
No, it's not covered.
Why is it not covered? Well,
because I have to. It is approved by the HSE, but to get the injections, I need to either have had a heart attack recently, or my cholesterol has to be above 8. The idea was to keep the cholesterol down, which is brilliant. So now I have to wait for it to go back up seriously high to get back on it.
And you know what your cholesterol is at the minute? 5, 4 or 5?
Well, the last it's in around sort of 3.8, which is pretty good, you know. And it's just a matter of time before it spikes
up again. And have you ever been at 8?
No, I haven't.
Thank God, you probably wouldn't be here.
No. So it's
so how many people do you, insofar as you know, Tommy? Like, did you ever meet the other people who were on the drugs trial for Sanofi?
No, never. No. I just went to the consultant in the Beacon every 3 months with my blood results, and they would just go over them with me, and then I would see them again in another 3 months. So it was every quarter.
And the injection was what, twice a month?
Yes.
And why, you'd have to go to the hospital to get the injection? Or could you
No.
You did it yourself. Yeah, great.
Yeah, it's a pen. It's a pen, and you don't feel a thing. And it's fantastic. You keep it in the fridge and you take it out, let it get to room temperature, then you take it.
Just a quick jab.
That's it, yeah.
And have you checked, well, it's a new drug, but is there any drug, either this one or something similar, available in other countries? You know the way people come back from Spain with a whole list of things which are...
No, I haven't actually checked.
And how's your health generally?
It's pretty good, yeah, but like, this is not going to help it. And I just think it's, as I said, going back to it again, anybody who was on the trial, I think, should have automatically qualified because they've been on it for a number of years and then to be taken off it. Why were they putting it in the first place? Let's put it that way.
But the HSE would say, hang on, you were on a private drug trial. It wasn't a HSE trial, was it?
I'm not too...
No, well, the trials have to be run by the pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, that's Big Pharma. Yeah,
with permission.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's look, I don't know, Joe, where this is going to take me, but I think the guys in Big Pharma should really, you know, they use us as guinea pigs. Normally, a guinea pig doesn't come out the better of things, but.
But you were in fairness, you were a willing guinea pig.
Yeah.
You were willing, and you got medical advice. You told me before you.
Yeah, that's right. And I was very happy to do it. But just then to be told, look, that's it, good luck.
How long are we on it for a finish?
Just about 3 years.
That's a long, long time, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And the system sort of depends on it when you're on it so long and then to come off it. And I don't know what the answer is, John.
We were trying to find out how many other people were on that trial. Mm-hmm. And how would it break the bank if either the company or the HSE met each other halfway, even for the people who were on the trial who wish to continue?
It's something to think about, but it has been approved by the HSE to give to patients.
Okay.
And you won't get it unless you've, as I said previously, had a heart attack or have extremely high cholesterol levels, 8+.
Now, just on the trial itself, were you told, by the way, you might, this is the drug, but we might be giving you a placebo?
No.
You follow me? Like, there always has to be a blind. There always has to be someone who thinks they're getting the tablet, but they're not.
Yeah. I was never told that. Obviously, my cholesterol was creeping up, and then they started me on this, and then my cholesterol normalised.
Okay. Well, hopefully it comes. Well, it won't unless you get this. So it's just a massive breakthrough for cholesterol sufferers.
It is.
High cholesterol.
Yeah, and for people who can't take statins. So statin intolerant people, this is perfect for them, as it was for me. And
are Sanofi based in Ireland? Most pharma companies are.
They've an Irish telephone number and they've also an office in Malta.
Okay, but they have an Irish... I don't know how big Sanofi are. I know maybe they're part of Novartis or part of Pfizer or part of Merck or whatever. But they're all... I think, isn't it 9 out of the 10 biggest pharma companies in the world manufacture in Ireland, which is incredible. Which is absolutely brilliant, but... there's sometimes they take on board that we do manufacture it in Ireland and we will do our best because of the support we've been given. But anyway, We try. Anyone else been on that trial? Sanofi Praluent 75 mg. Tommy, stay well. Hopefully you'll get the jab again very, very soon. That's Tommy McCabe. Joe at rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Rebranding. Lots of organisations, lots of products, lots of services. Every now and again go through a rebranding exercise, usually very expensive, and sometimes they don't always work. One of the most famous ones was the Pepsi rebranding, where the oval red and blue, they changed the shape of it at the cost of millions of dollars, and it was a disaster because it looked like an open mouth rather than the logo so many people were used to. But Anne-Marie Carey and Mina Fitzpatrick have contacted us. Anne-Marie Carey, the National Council for the Blind in Ireland, a great organisation. You say they tell us the story, Anne-Marie. They are rebranding.
Well, good afternoon, Joe. The National Council for the Blind of Ireland, I found out a few months ago something funny that would be very funny if it wasn't sad. The National Council for the Blind of Ireland is thinking of rebranding for better marketing strategies. They're claiming it will be a better marketing strategy.
Okay.
And they're changing their name from the National Council for the Blind of Ireland to Sight Ireland. I'm not sure what to make of it, and I'm not sure what the general public would make of it, Joe.
What do you make of it? Because you're in the position more than most to have a considered opinion.
I'll tell you a little bit. My situation is I've been vision impaired all my life. No problem to me. I'm fully educated, fully working in society, thank goodness.
Yeah.
My problem with it is it going to be, the organisation is claiming that it's inclusive, that it will be more inclusive, that the name NCBI, National Council for the Blind, is too confusing for the general public. My point of view would be that if somebody said Sight Ireland to me, it could lead me to anything on Google. It can lead you, when you type in, or if you use dictation like most blind or vision impaired people do, if you type in Sight Ireland in an emergency, you will get absolutely everything and anything, from caravan sites to holiday sites to dating sites. It's simply more confusing and more ambiguous.
The sight savers.
Sight savers, yeah. Yeah.
And that's how you. But do you object? Have you difficulties with the word sight, given that you're visually impaired?
I do have difficulties with the word sight, in the sense that I'm happy to say that I'm confident. I'm happy to say that I'm vision impaired. I've had impaired vision all my life. I was born totally blind. Thank goodness those people in the Eye and Ear Hospital in 1975 operated on me. They gave me some of my vision back, and I'm happily working ever since. But for somebody who has recently lost their vision, Joe, I think the word sight would be very, very hurtful. I think it could be very hurtful. Mm-hmm. The same, you wouldn't change their association would not change its name to Walk. Or the association for the branded, and it did not change its name to Get Up and Hear. I think that's
okay. Your line is disintegrating on me rapidly there. And we will try and get a better line. I'll bring in Mina. Mina Fitzpatrick. Mina, good afternoon. The rebranding. Now, the NCBI haven't confirmed to us that their new name is going to be Sight, as in SIGHT. Sight Ireland, transforming the lives of the blind, our vision impaired community. Are you for or against this new name?
I'm against the name, Joe, but what I suppose my point is, I only found out about it about 2 weeks ago. We were in a meeting. I'm an advocate for the NCBI.
Okay.
And I had heard through the grapevine there was talk of a change of name, and I just said, what is the new name? And the girl said, Sight Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of said, I kind of had a moment, and I was thinking, well, I was thinking of the recent campaigns, you know, that are out there, and I was thinking, well, that would be like calling Black Lives Matter White Lives Matter to me personally, because Sight, I've lost my last bit of sight in the last 2 years.
Okay.
I've also have had sight problems my whole life, and it hasn't, as Anne-Marie, like Anne-Marie, hasn't got in my way of, you know, leading a really good life. The NCBI organisation are very good. They have brilliant services. Nothing against them as an organisation. Just the fact that they're changing it, and no, I went on my Facebook page and asked a few people, had they heard of this? I went into a few groups, and no one I talked to had been consulted or asked, you know, would they like, you know, what they think of name change, or so it was a surprise that they were going to change it to sight, as in something that I don't have. I mean, you know, I can see that they want to, everyone wants to rebrand every so often, and they want to, you know, do the best and try and get the best for their fundraising or whatever. But for me, I just, the word sight, it doesn't sit well with me. You know, it doesn't, it's not really a name I could get on board with. Obviously, I haven't been told it is definitely changing. What I did do was I went and Googled sight Ireland. And it brought me to the NCBI website, which led me to think
have they copyrighted the logo and the name?
That's what I don't know, Joe. I don't know. And like I just did that for curiosity.
They would have to do that, because are there any other charities in Ireland called Sight Ireland? I doubt it, but it's hardly all that original. But Anne-Marie, what do you think of Anne-Marie's point? It's like, I didn't fully hear her, but the gist was it'd be like the Irish Wheelchair Association rebranding themselves as Walk.
Yes, yes, exactly, like the Irish Walking Association, or Black Lives Matter to White Lives Matter. You know, it's not representative of. You know, it needs to be a name, like, you know, a lot of names were kind of branded. We talked about different names in the groups, and there's two organisations out there already. There's Vision Sports Ireland, which is kind of to do with sports for people that are vision impaired and blind. Okay. And then there's Child Vision, which is the school for the blind and vision impaired. So a lot of people said, well, maybe to tie in with those two, something with vision in it, because vision is more visionary. Is less kind of
future,
like
future, yeah.
There's more kind of a vision than sight is very like.
But is vision not already a children's charity somewhere? Why do I?
It probably is, and I wouldn't be. They'd be more aware of it than I would. But I suppose it's just that you know, the important thing is you know, it should be a name that includes. That's inclusive of everybody.
But apparently, reading up the background to it, they say they were unhappy with the word blind, National Council for the Blind, because a lot of people that they deal with are not.
Yes, God and forbid, I can understand. Yeah,
are not fully blind,
that.
But they're visually impaired.
Yeah, I can understand that completely, because I would usually, even though now I don't have much sight at all, and I technically am blind, I would always be visually impaired. So I can see. I can see where they're coming from with it, but I think, you know, it's something that needs to be kind of inclusive of everybody.
And where are you, I don't know, is there a mail? How do they contact you? You get a tape or an audio every month, or you read it. I know Braille has kind of gone out of fashion because of so many
I still love my Braille.
Were you contacted about this? Do you have an opinion?
No, well, the first time I had heard someone saying, you know, in just general, someone had said, oh, did you know NCBI has changed the name? And I said, no. And this is you'll find out. And I said, of course, me being Irish and being curious, I said, oh, there's a bit of a story here now. I'll see. And I was at a meeting. They have, they have an advocacy network, you know, so we can kind of represent the organisation. And there's one that I live in Wexford, and so does Anne-Marie, and there's one in the southeast, and we had a meeting. You know, like a Zoom meeting that you talk to. And at the end of that meeting, under any other business, I said, right, I'll ask. I said, is it true that the NCBI is changing their name?
Okay.
And the representative said yes. And I said, you know, what is it changing to? And they said, Sight Ireland. That was the, so it's only 2 weeks tomorrow that I've, or 2 weeks today or tomorrow that I've known. It's only recent that I've.
Anne-Marie, apparently said, I mean, Joe at RT.ie and 51551. Is our text number, but Anne-Marie, apparently the National Council for the Blind in Australia have rebranded as Vision Australia. Did you hear that?
I did, yeah. I checked out a few international things on the internet, and what I find is Vision is a lot more kind of positive. You're moving forward.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's a different, I know as an English teacher myself, I know that they're both synonyms, you know, they're both the same,
they can
have similar meanings in some contexts, but I think Vision is more positive. Now, I know there are a few organisations in Ireland that possibly have the word Vision already in them, and maybe the name has been taken.
Well, World Vision is the one I was thinking of, isn't it?
Yeah, but I would use the point that, well, Sight is already taken because Sight Savers Ireland do great work and they've already got the name. There's another agency of travel agents, I was just looking on the internet over the weekend just to Google it using dictation, and Sight is an agent of travel site or something.
And there's Sight Serve. Now it's a different spelling of Sight, but it's
yes, but still
it's a massive company.
As vision impaired people, we don't all use Braille anymore. Sometimes what people would use, just like the general public, we all use our smartphones and our iPhones and things now. There's amazing technology out there
brilliant.
The work that the National Council for the Blind does, what happens is, you know, blind or vision impaired or people with sight problems can get grants from the government for, you know, technology devices. And then the National Council for the Blind would be one of the agencies in the country that provides training in the use of that technology. You know, there are amazing services in relation to that and in amazing services, kind of an amazing chance talk to for people, day centres, older users would use it. The local advocacy networks can kind of get us chatting about important things like keeping the path clear, the e-scooters, how we're going to make sure we hear them coming, ringing our bells on our bikes when they're coming.
Wheelie bins scattered all over the footpaths.
Move your wheelie bin on the way. Don't get me started. But the problem, I think, even in the last newsletter sent out, do you want to know what's going on from now on NCBI, there wasn't a mention of the name change. And it's kind of ironic that the organisation that is supposed to be providing accessible information doesn't seem to be telling the general public or blind users that the name is changing.
Okay, well, we've asked them for a statement, but we've asked them for a clarification, but we haven't got it, unfortunately. At this stage. By the way, Anne-Marie and Mina, what has been the most significant development? You mentioned technology. Is it the iPhone or the iPad in terms of your difference, in terms of being visually impaired? What's been the most significant development?
Yeah, for me, the iPad and the iPhone has really opened up my world to so many different things.
Well, tell us, how do you work an iPad if you're visually impaired?
There's a thing on all different iPads and iPhones called VoiceOver.
Okay.
And you can go in and they can either set it up for you or someone can set it up for you. And it literally just speaks everything that's on your screen and you can go in. And I love my Audible books.
Oh,
so
magic,
I go in and listen
magic,
to them and I listen to my music. And like, say, you know, like as we were talking about searches, you can go in, you can do a voice search.
Yeah, of course,
your voice
Siri or whatever.
And it definitely has opened. And like that, I would have got training from the NCBI initially
with
my iPhone. And yeah, no, it's definitely for me, and it's some of the technology can be very expensive, you know, like the laptops and that, they're quite expensive, the technology, but it's probably, for me, it would be the best. Now, some people use different ones and find different things, you know, it's a bit like, you know, the Samsungs and the iPhones, people find different things better. But for me, I love the iPhone and the iPad.
And now, for you, Mina,
For me, I'm coming at it from two angles. I use it myself, but I also use it for teaching other people as well. For me, I have the iPhone, and like Mina was saying, every single person in the universe on their iPhone, they can tap a certain number of times, and their voiceover is on it. There are social media groups like iPhone and iPad apps for the blind, where you can go on and find, you know, different apps recommended by sites. You know, people with disabilities all over the world. For me, there are things like Blind Square where I can manage to travel. I have travelled in London or Amsterdam or wherever I want to go on my own. I can shake it at the door, just like your Google Maps, to give me more information.
Okay.
You know, there's a step three doors away from me or something. And things like, you know, Tap Sea, Blind Square. Apps beyond belief on it, Joe. Apps beyond belief. But
fantastic.
Use a smartphone in the centre where I teach. There are a smartphone as well, and I can use that when I'm teaching with students. I can use that. There's no problem.
And I heard on the BBC, I think it was a World Service overnight, this incredible new test that they've introduced, the NHS has introduced. It's a test for the baby in the womb, actually, to detect retinoblastoma.
And you see, there are so many different eye conditions. That's another problem or another concern I would have about the name change. Nowadays, there are so many advertisements and so many, you know, things about saving eyesight or rectifying the problem that I would be afraid that for the families or friends or the person suffering from recent vision loss, I would be afraid that it would get the impression that you're going to get your eyesight back. You're not, in some potential, Joe, going to get your, in some circumstances, you are not going to get your eyesight back. What you can do is work hard and grow to accept it. And in that way, vision is very different than the word sight.
Yeah, it is. Very different. And it's much more hopeful.
They reckon this screening test in the UK will mean that 50 fewer children will be born every year with blindness, which is incredible.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You know, their population is 10, but that means 5 in Ireland. We had this
on social media over the weekend when I was fishing about as well. Some people were kind of expressing the opinion that, you know, it's trying to be positive, but it's almost toxic positivity in making people feel ashamed to use the word blind or vision impaired in their condition. And definitely, I do not want an organisation in my country, the national agency, should not be doing that to any member. I'm confident. Mina sounds like a very confident person, but there are people out there. You wouldn't call a bereavement agency Life, Joe. You just wouldn't do it.
Definitely not. By the way, does the word blind, you know the way people say, oh, you must be blind not to know that. Sometimes the word blind can take on a pejorative meaning, i.e.
It's very funny sometimes. You would hear people sometimes, I'm sure, Mina, you get it too. You get people trying to change the word see and change the word blind all the time. That doesn't matter. It wouldn't matter to me. I don't mind if somebody is having a good time laughing with me or having a conversation with me. As long as they can be laughing with me, as long as they're not laughing at me.
I've got
the confidence to know that. Mina's got the confidence, I'd say, from what I'm speaking to her, has got the confidence to know that. But for somebody who was recently diagnosed with vision loss, if you're calling sight, it's just horrible. It would be hurtful. It would be really sore to them. Very, very sore.
So it's like a process, you see, when someone, especially if they're going, you know, if someone is going from full sight to no sight, which unfortunately some people can wake up one day and have absolutely no sight. And you know, you hear stories of driving to the hospital to get an eye operation and having to leave their car behind. Like, it's such a traumatic thing. Yeah. For them, you know, it's nearly like, you know, it's such a massive thing if you're going from being able to see to not to see that, you know, it's a very sensitive issue for many people.
Yeah,
and a word said wrong can really, you know, set them. So, you know, the organisation itself as it is brilliant and it does a really, really good job. And neither myself or Anne-Marie are here in any negative...
I can hear that, totally.
No, there just needs to be a pause.
But Anne-Marie, you say if NCBI change the name to Sight Ireland, that would be horrible and hurtful to people who were...
Totally blind, yeah. But also, I know there are... the what came up at the meeting or in any response that we received to emails that we sent them was that they feel that the general public is kind of afraid, or doctors are afraid of referring the general public to the organisation because the word blind is in the title.
Yeah,
but I would suggest that the word sight will be equally as confusing. That's what I would say. You do have to take the time to accept the, you know, condition that you've been diagnosed with as people get older, sometimes it happens, and sometimes it happens to young people with diabetes and things too, due to different conditions.
But
I don't think the name is going to do what they're. Okay. I don't think the name is not going to take away the pain.
And
the name site is not going to take away the pain, and definitely is going to be more confusing for marketing.
And is that the sense you're hearing from other people, Anne-Marie?
That is, yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
Everyone's united in the one thing. One thing is they do not like the name Site Ireland. I mean, that's out of all the responses we got, that was the... And also, you know, we've been told that there was a consultation process. Not one person can we find...
I can't find one person.
Well, rebranding's are extraordinarily difficult. They can go... disastrously wrong, and look it up. There's, as I said, there was a Pepsi. They're changing their logos or whatever. Now, the rebranding I remember, because I used to be in this business, so to speak, at a very, very low level of advertising, when Norwich Union, the insurance company, wanted to change their name to identify that they were a multinational company, they hired one of the biggest rebranding companies in the world, and the rebranding company arrived in to the Norwich Union headquarters in Norwich, of all places, and they presented the new name, and the new name, which has obviously worked, is Aviva. And obviously they said Aviva is a palindrome and it doesn't exist anywhere. We've looked everywhere. We'd have no problems with copyright and patents and all this carry on. And the Norwich Union board were over the moon, and they all decided to head off to the 2-star Michelin restaurant in Norwich City, and they all walked through the centre of the town, and they turned a corner, and there was a boutique in Norwich called Aviva. Aviva. So Norwich Union promptly bought the boutique.
And Joe, that brings up an issue in my head. You know, when you're talking about rebranding.
Yeah.
My dad worked for a very famous Irish airline, and you know, had a very strong brand. But a lot of these rebranding things in what I, as a layperson here, rebranding will cost. You know, they will have to have cost money.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
I kind of wonder if they are rebranding. How much money is going from to this rebranding process, which is a worry, because you're kind of thinking, how much is this taking, like, that this could
away from other potential, yes, yeah. I agree with you, yeah. Mina. How much would be taken away from other potential services that the organisation already does provide valuable services, but there is a lot more that can be done.
So have they got a company in to do this?
Home health for younger people under 70 who are registered blind or registered vision impaired, but don't necessarily have access to home care services.
Yeah, I'm on the list. I'm on the list for home health since last September, and I've heard nothing. But that's a whole other issue.
Okay, Joan. Joan is on the line. 51551. Joan, you're visually impaired. Were you aware that NCBI are seriously thinking? And Mina and Anne-Marie point out, when you Google Site Ireland now, you get the NCBI. Were you aware, Joan, that they were going to change the name?
Absolutely not. But now I wouldn't be in constant, you know, I wouldn't be in touch all the time with NCBI. But I would be from time to time. And I had no idea. I would like the title Vision Ireland. Somebody else, I think, said that. Definitely not Site Ireland. It's like SITE. What does it mean? It's going to be constantly taken up wrongly. People will be looking up construction sites and things. I don't see the point in it. As somebody said, it's a flat word. It's done and dusted. There's no beginning, middle or end, and especially no future to it. Vision is a wonderful word, because it involves an inner vision as well as an outer vision.
Mm-hmm.
And people who are visually impaired need to depend a lot on their inner vision in all
kinds
of ways.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't like it. NCBI itself is age old. It's well over 100 years old, as far as I know.
Okay.
It's a respected institution.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very, very helpful and well regarded. And I really don't see the point in even changing. I think people who would get upset about being called blind if they're visually impaired are being a bit oversensitive, maybe, you know?
Okay.
As somebody said there, I haven't listened to the whole programme, but I think that whatever money would be involved in, you know, rebranding, as they said, we need, well, that needs to be carefully examined because it's taxpayers' money.
And they fundraise.
And I don't want to be critical of the NCBI. I've received considerable help.
Okay.
And I'm deeply grateful. And I hope to be able to avail of more help. I want to try and belong myself to an advocacy group and just talk with people who are more or less in the same boat.
Okay.
You know, I'm so glad. I don't know who brought this up or how it got aired.
Anne-Marie,
but I'm really
Nina
glad to hear
us,
it.
Okay, Joan, stay with us. Joe at RT.ie, a night surgeon retired after the break, will give us his opinion. Joe at RT.ie.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
We've been contacted by a number of people who are visually impaired, and they have become aware that the National Council for the Blind in Ireland, they say, are considering rebranding and changing their name to SIGHT, S-I-G-H-T, SIGHT Ireland. And the strap underneath it is transforming the lives of the blind or vision impaired community. And the visually impaired people we've heard from are not happy with the word sight. And the analogy they've used is it would be like the Irish Wheelchair Association rebranding to walk. It's probably the best example so far. But Patricia McGettrick is a retired eye surgeon. Patricia, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Joe.
How are you?
I'm very good.
That's good.
There are female eye surgeons, believe
yes,
it or not.
Brilliant. And I came across a few of them with my mother in the Royal Victoria Eye and Ear Hospital in Dublin, and they were absolutely brilliant, as all the staff were. Tell us, Patricia, what do you think about the name change proposed?
Well, I'm just speaking personally from my own practical experience,
yeah,
looking after my patients, Joe. And I'm sure the reason why NCBI have done this is because of the negative connotations of the word blind in their long-standing name, National Council for the Blind in Ireland.
Okay.
So just to explain to you, if you are somebody who is losing their sight for whatever reason, from glaucoma, diabetic eye disease, age-related macular degeneration, they would probably be the three most common.
Yeah.
You become eligible for registration with the National Council for the Blind in Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And that registration is a formal process that's done by your eye doctor, whatever level they're practicing at. And the thing is that those of us working at the coalface know that the term blind has very negative connotations. And if you're registering somebody who hasn't lost their sight but has developed a visual impairment, if you use the word blind, they think, am I being registered with this organisation because I'm going to go blind?
Okay.
That's exactly what they think. They may not speak it, they may not ask it, but that's what they think. And I think that may be behind the changing of the name.
And people have to...
You see, my argument to that would be...
Is that Anne-Marie?
Well, my argument to that would be that the name is going to... You have to be realistic. No matter what happens, the person is still going to have to go through the same grieving process. If they are losing their eyesight, they are going to have to go through the same grieving process. It takes time sometimes for some people to accept it. And I suppose it would be, why not include the word National Council for the Blind and Vision Ireland? Do it something like that, maybe, so that that way you are... We should be encouraging people not to have fear of blindness rather than simply deny what is happening to them.
Patricia?
I'm not going to argue any of that. The only reason that I got in touch was because I think there is a good reason for the NCBI to want to change their name. Whether they've changed it to an appropriate name or not is another argument.
I can see Patricia's, I can see her point of view completely. And I do think if the name needs to be changed, it should be changed to something to include the people that are losing their sight and trying to come to terms with it, and the people that already have lost their sight or are losing their sight. So something along the word vision that takes out the blind word out of it. Or, something in between, like sight, kind of, it's like, and to use an old phrase of my mum's, it would be like chucking the baby out with the bathwater, I think it should be an inclusive name for all. But that's kind of what we're trying to get across, that it should be something that includes the people who are losing their eyesight or have lost their eyesight.
Yeah,
so
I would agree.
Vision is a good name to combine everybody.
But Patricia, you're seeing from your work that the word blind does strike fear into people, doesn't it?
Well, it doesn't strike fear into them, Joe. That's a bit dramatic.
Okay.
But you can certainly,
It would sometimes. I'm vision impaired. When I was a child in Ireland, we were called partially sighted. Now we're called partially blind sometimes. When I take out my white cane, I get a different response in society than I do if I'm just going down to the local shop and I don't need to carry my simple cane. It does strike fear into people. But the organisation that is, I know it must be very, very hard for you, Patricia, when you're in a doctor's office and you're giving the diagnosis. I can't imagine what that must be like for you to have to do that. But I think there needs to be kind of more public image, positive kind of look, this is what Mina is doing with her iPhone, this is what Anne-Marie is achieving, and Sight Ireland, why not something like Glow Ireland, helping people to move forward with vision loss.
Stay with us back after this break.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
At this stage it seems the reaction from people who are visually impaired against the changing of the National Council for the Blind in Ireland to Sight Ireland is almost unanimously against. Now, Dr. McGettridge argued about the word blind, which I think has, it's not for me to decide. Some people do think has a point to get that word out now. So we're looking for a new name. Maureen Ward. Maureen, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. Your mother was visually impaired, you tell us.
Yeah, she had second one eye. Yeah. So I kind of know a wee bit about how it's like, I suppose.
What do you think of the National Council for the Blind changing the name to Sight Ireland?
I would agree with the other two ladies on there. I don't think it's kind of the right name. It's okay, but that's why I just thought that maybe the name that I put in Outlook, I was just thinking of the future and
Outlook.
Yeah, it's kind of gets it all in there, and it's
okay. Anne Marie, what's your immediate reaction to Outlook?
My immediate reaction to Outlook is probably, I think the name is a brilliant idea, and it's already gone by a Microsoft company, I think.
It's already what? Sorry.
Sorry,
Anne Marie, what did you say? It's already.
It's already been taken by my email provider, I'd say. Outlook has already gone on it. In the north of Ireland, they changed to Foresight. Bad because it was kind of looking forward, moving forward.
Ray O'Briel. Ray, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. I'm not visually impaired, but I understand people's reservations. But how about Ryark? It's a nice Irish word for sight.
Beautiful
name,
yeah.
It also means a view. It also means a view.
That is perfect. What I can do with that immediately, Ray, I'll tell you what I can do with that immediately. Rehabilitating, advancing. I can find a few words that it can stand for.
But Ryark is already taken by the television series.
I was just going to say, I knew that.
Now, it's a long time ago, but it still are in existence. A brilliant, brilliant program.
Well, how about Thule, Joe? A few for Diane.
Say it again.
Thule
as an eye.
Yeah, true.
But imagine given that half of the UK can't pronounce Siobhan when they're reading it, what would Ryark come out as? Radiark.
Well, well.
And Tig, if you listen to some stations across the water, when they see the word Tig, they can't even handle Micheál Martin half the time. But they come up with Tadja, Dancing at Luna's, it became Dancing at Lugnasa. How would they handle Ryark?
R-Y-R-K-E or F-O-O-L or something. Good
joke. Okay. Well, it's Strauss or Overton. Now, Ryark, it seems to be the best suggestion so far. Anne-Marie, Mina, Maureen, go to Mina Mahogat. Back tomorrow, 1:45. Today's producer was Fergus Sweeney. Ray Darcy next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.